Hey, welcome back to another episode of This Is Hot Boga. If you haven't had a chance to go over to iTunes or Podbean, go ahead and give us a smash on that subscribe button and a friendly 5-star review.
Go on Instagram and rub on that follow button if you want as well, because we'd appreciate that too. Before we get into our exciting guest today, we got to thank a few sponsors first up. Jared, what colors are rabbit, deer, elk, and moose?
Probably shades of brown.
They're shades of brown. Exactly. If green were such a good camo color, then these animals would have been green coming out.
Very well said.
And that's why ASAD, it's not really why, ASAD has a fantastic design. It breaks up your silhouette really well. Learn more at asadcamo.com. Go ahead.
The next sponsor we would like to thank is Fish Hunt Fight Gear.
FHF.
They hooked us up with some sweet bino harnesses that are comfortable and really holds our S7 binoculars really great. Go over on their Facebook page and Instagram page and also their website. They have one of those, fhfgear.com.
Hey, Jared.
Hey, Jim.
Did you know that Northern Broadheads offers a single and a double bevel broadhead for both compound and traditional hunters? So if you ever decide to go back to the wheelie bows, as Adam would call them, you are going to be set. Did you know any of this?
Of course.
Well, excellent. I don't have anything else to tell you. Go check them out. Northern Broadheads. We love them.
Our RK1s from Newbury Archery really made it easier for me and James to be adaptable to the traditional world. These custom bolts were made exactly for us and how we wanted them. I got mine dipped in ASAT, and it's absolutely beautiful. Check it out.
Because they do custom dipping and stuff too. Bowworks and Kyle and all those guys do a great job with that.
Newbreedarchery.com.
All right, Hex is a revolutionary company that blocks your natural electrical energy fields. Yes, that's right. So you get a better hunting experience. All living creatures emit this electrical signal. If your heart is beating or your muscles are moving, then you are producing these fields. The thing is, Hex will block these so animals can't sense you and you can get real close, which we need because we're not great shots. This is real. Mike was a guest and they even were featured on Shark Week. So if you're into that kind of thing, check them out, hexhunting.com. War-Torn Archery makes some awesome stabilizers. They're very customizable. They have different lengths. You can get a back bar extension if you're a compound guy. We even run them on our traditional archery equipment. Check them out, wartornarchery.com. Jared, do you use a rangefinder when you're out hunting?
I do, yeah.
What if I told you that you could get a bow sight with the rangefinder built in? So you look at it, something far away, you push the button, it'll tell you the range and it'll adjust your sight for you. Would you be interested in that?
I'd tell you you're crazy.
Well, I'm not. Burris makes such a bow sight. So go to burrisoptics.com to learn more. So funny. And then Stanley has a heart attack. And those two episodes are actually might be my two favorite. I laugh out loud, and I've seen it. So I've got a six-year-old. When she was in the process of being born, I was watching The Office. That's how deep I go with The Office.
Oh my God, that's awesome. I appreciate that. So good.
Well, Tag, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, man, thanks.
We've been so excited to talk to you. But you've done the right thing in the past. You were sick once, you couldn't make it. And the other one that I give you a lot of respect for was you had to miss for a future father-in-law's, it sounds like, birthday, which was wise.
Mm-hmm.
Very wise.
Yeah, well, and I apologize for both. I felt terrible. I was like, oh my gosh, these guys are going to hate me. And I totally understand it. But yeah, we had a lot of fun on his birthday. Yeah. Being sick. I mean, trade show season, man.
I can't drive around. Do you guys sleep at all?
Not normally. I mean, there's too much fun to be had, too much hard work to do. And it's just kind of full gas from start to finish. But hey, you can win sheep hunt.
Yeah, well, what other than winning sheep hunts, what's your favorite part about these trade shows?
I mean, honestly, I do digital marketing. So for me, it's getting out from behind the computer and getting to hear everyone's stories. You know, that was sort of my first introduction to First Sight, is getting to go to what was last year, our first show, is Dallas Safari Club. And it was the best thing to just start talking to everyone. And like I said, get away from the screens and interact with one another and have conversations. I mean, what a concept.
Yeah, you know, do you find it a little difficult at first leaving your computer home and interacting with another human being during the day?
Yeah, almost like you forgot a limb somewhere, which is a little alarming that's the feeling. But yeah, 100%.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, hey, do you want to give us a little background about, you know, who you are, what you do, and your kind of your background into hunting, which is a bit of an interesting one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. My name is Tiger Spence. I'm originally from Summit County, Colorado, a resort town. Most people are familiar with Breckenridge.
Yep.
It's a great place to grow up as a skier. You know, you definitely spend your fair amount of time outdoors, but you know, for me, that was all centered around ski racing. And so when I moved to Idaho, it was for a job and was not a first light job, but was still in the outdoor industry. And it was kind of a transition period for me as far as no longer ski racing, but working professionally. And I was kind of was like, what's next? You know, and I think that's probably relatable for a lot of people, especially as you move into your 30s, as far as, you know, what are you going to do to kind of continue to grow as a person? And hunting was always very intriguing to me in the sense that it was something that was so foreign. I didn't grow up with it. I was not raised. My father didn't hunt, and no one else in my family did. And so it took time to figure out sort of how I was going to do it. And that started with me just signing up for hunter safety. Actually, the summer before I worked at First Light. So I finished hunter safety and had gone on, I think, one mule deer hunt. And by gone on one mule deer hunt, I'm saying I went with my friend who works here. He's our director of operations, Chase Milliman. Okay. And I show up at the trailhead in Nike sneakers for an all-day mule deer hunt.
Respect. Respect.
And so, I mean, I don't even have a rifle or anything. This is purely just, I wanted to just try to get out in the field. And so then fast forward, you know, a few months and got the job at First Light. And, you know, had again wanted to get into hunting and saw it as an amazing opportunity to kind of leverage my professional experience as digital marketing manager and get in with an awesome brand and learn how to hunt. So that was kind of what took us to Sheep Show in Reno.
Yeah. All right. Let's dive into that.
That's
a
good segue.
So that's a great segue. We don't have to do any work anymore.
Nope.
We just have Tag make them for us. So you go to Sheep Show every year. First Light does. I'm assuming you guys work pretty close with that organization.
Oh yeah, every year. Actually, I don't know how many years prior before that we've started going. But we were back obviously this year. I can't imagine us not going back after the number of sheep hunts that we've won, and it's an incredible show. And you know what Wild Sheep Foundation does, kind of goes without speak, you know, saying, but yeah, it's an awesome time and obviously something that's going to hold, you know, a special place in my heart forever.
So that morning, you know, walk me through, did you feel like a winner that morning when you were walking around? Did you feel like something special was about to happen to you?
Pissed a bowl of excellence?
Honestly, the more we joked about it, the more I was, and I haven't admitted this a ton, but internally more scared about the reality of if I actually did win this hunt. But I, at the time, knew so little about it. I mean, I'm being totally honest, because it was an ongoing joke all day about if I were to win that hunt and how I probably will, because that's the universe. And I mean, I was legit nervous at the fact of it happening. So I think when they called my name, it was a combination of like excitement and out of my mind, like, oh my God, this is incredible, combined with just terror.
Yeah.
Of what have I gotten myself into, and how am I gonna really make this happen?
So you're sitting there, they call you your name, you walk up, you get your, you know, whatever they give you. You sit back down. What's the first thing your First Light compadres had to say to you?
I mean, I hadn't even gotten off the stage, and Cal put his arm around me. And we say it in the video, but I mean, it's like almost too good to believe. But he literally said, you know, hey, buddy, this is kind of like pulling the water boy off the bench in the bottom of the ninth inning of the World Series.
They said that in the video.
And we're kind of going to need a grand slam. And he legit said that, and he couldn't have been more right. I'm not going to say it made me feel, you know, really good in the moment. But no, I think from the moment it happened and I heard what I'd won, which is the first question, what did I just win? Was, okay, how do I make how do I make the most of this? Like, how do I spend every second, you know, from here through the hunt, just making sure that it is everything it could possibly be. And I think that, you know, I joke about the fear thing. It, you know, that's just, I think for me, I really was focused on just maximizing the opportunity. And I think the only fear is like letting yourself down by not. And so I think that was, that's what I mean by that.
So your reaction was priceless.
I know, it was really good. It was just amazing. So for people that might not know, tell them about, you know, what you won. Tell them how that worked.
So what I won is every year at the Less Than One Club Drawing at the Wild Sheep Foundation, they auction off. This year it was 3 North American wild sheep hunts. And what I won was a doll sheep hunt in the Brooks Range. Now, again, like I heard my name called. I walked up there. I was so excited. I swear, like I blacked out from the moment I hit the stage to getting off of it. And had to, from that moment, learn, okay, first of all, what is a doll sheep? And two, where is the Brooks Range?
Yeah. You found out.
It's in heaven.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, exactly.
So you walked down. Who's the first person you told maybe that wasn't there?
Oh, my fiance was, of course, the first
answer.
Person I called. But then after that was her dad, who... whose birthday I, you know, went to the other day when we couldn't chat, my soon-to-be father-in-law, who's hunted his whole life, and he's like, you have got to be kidding me. I mean, just utter shock. So excited for me, but also, you know, a little underlying, like, how did you win this? You know, right. Knowing well that at that point, and I don't know if any, like, I had not, other than trying to chase my friend up a ridge who was going on a mule deer hunt and I was wearing Nikes. I'd gone, you know, quail hunting and one waterfowl hunt. So this would be my first big game animal. So I think that was a pretty like consistent reaction that everyone had after that.
Yeah. Yeah. So you won, I'm sure word spread. Do you have a lot of people like reaching out, offering to help?
Chase, the friend of mine who I was just talking about was like, do you need a photographer? How do I get on this thing? How do I come with you? I mean, everyone at first sight. And I think beyond that, just everyone in the hunting industry was unbelievably welcoming. I mean, I'd be totally honest, when I walked off the stage and knew my hunting experience and knew what a big deal this hunt was,
right,
it's like, are people going to be mad at me? and it was honestly, and I would totally have understood it if people were, but it was the exact opposite. I mean, from right at the show the next day when I told people that I'd won it and had the conversation, and obviously it came up that I had not done big game hunting before and I had just gotten my hunter safety and this was my introduction to diving headfirst into hunting. It was overwhelmingly, how can I help you? And I don't think there's a whole lot of industries out there. You know, it takes a village and not a lot of people would, you know, step up that way. Like I was, you know, welcomed with open arms. It was crazy. I mean, it really just got me moving in the direction that I needed to go right away because everyone was there to help me do it.
Yeah.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how tough was Ross's little, like the
yeah,
little
his,
physical
training.
Yeah. A little training simulation.
I mean, it was no joke. Ross put me through the ringer as far as, you know, needing to be dedicated to go from never shooting a rifle to shooting out to 400 yards with a 300 Win Mag and sort of the progression and dedication that it took to go from that. It was a lot of fun, but I definitely showed up every day ready to work and focus because, you know, it was a lot in a relatively short amount of time.
Right.
You know, we're talking 7 months from walking off the stage to walking onto the plane, flying to the Brooks Range. And then we had winter. And so it was like every day I got to get to the range was a good day.
Yeah. I'm actually picturing, well, I'm not sure what I'm picturing. I'm either picturing Ross on your back, like Yoda, you know, when Luke was training, or I'm picturing him like yelling at you like a drill sergeant.
Riding a llama.
Yeah, riding a llama.
No, definitely 100% more of the Yoda character. The sensei sort of, calming type figure.
Shoot a ram, you know.
Than the yelling. Yes, exactly. I think there was a number of conversations of, Tag, what do you think your ram is doing right now?
Oh yeah, we've had that conversation. What are the elk doing?
Never thought about that. Yeah. Probably, and what are they? I said, or sleeping. I would hope for them. I don't know. Yeah.
Surviving or sleeping.
Eating.
So how soon did you start? Like right away? How soon did you start all this training in?
I mean, from the moment we got back, it was actually driving back from the show. Randall Williams, who works for TRCP, was actually riding back to catch him with us. And Randall's a marksman, man. He'll sell himself short. But, you know, I said, okay, I need to start learning right now. Like, give me the basic fundamentals of how a rifle works. I mean, what is rim fire versus center fire? And I'm joking. I didn't ask that question. Yeah, I didn't know the difference. It was literally just though, like, let's start as I am an absolute first timer looking at a gun and let's go from there. And that was kind of like honestly, that drive back through to leaving was nonstop. I think the only time, if I'm being honest, that I really took a break was, I think there was a 2-week period in March last year where we got just absolutely hammered with snow. Mm-hmm. And I leveraged that excuse to go skiing versus shooting.
It's still train. It's physical. Right?
Yeah, exactly. But that was about it, man. It was full gas, to kind of get ready for it.
What was the physical training like? So you have a background, maybe give people your physical athletic background. Hmm.
Yeah, and I was lucky to ski, ski race. So for those that are not familiar with it, like slalom, giant slalom, super G, downhill ski racing for the University of Colorado, and skied D1 there. So, you know, going going on like a big, you know, a 14-year hike in Colorado is sort of the norm for us. And a lot of physical fitness in terms of weightlifting, Olympic lifting, things like that was a big regiment for a part of our regiment. So, I mean, I had a good foundation there to kind of go back to, and it was a lot of fun actually to revisit that and have that structure and that sort of, okay, let's put something down on paper. Let's be extremely dedicated. And like I mentioned before, kind of something that after ski racing, after you leave that sport, you know, you don't really know where that is going to come from in life. And so that part was awesome and made a lot of sense. And what we really started with, and I remember it like vividly, was kind of in the spring going on my first weighted pack hike with a couple guys here in the office. Again, another situation where everyone's helping me out and saying, come on, Tech, let's go.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, oh my gosh, I was so tired. And it blew my mind. It was like, this is so much harder than I expected. And at that time I was happy I had as much time as I had left to continue to hike. Cause it was a lot harder than I expected. And I think what I found through that and staying out and really trying to get as much vert in and as many miles in as I could is that I no way in shape or form dedicated enough time to like breaking in a pair of boots or understanding what went into that. I mean, I still feel like today I would have no idea. I mean, that is like almost an art form in and of itself.
Right. Like, yeah. You get bad boot situations after you put that many miles on. It cannot be pretty. Yeah. I've had some we've talked about it on the podcast, some black toes and stuff from really not being quite ready in that department.
And I mean, it's funny because ski racing is the same way. I mean, you dial in a pair of ski boots and you use them for 4 to 5 years or until they break.
Yeah.
You travel with them, like you carry them on your backpack so that they can't get lost. You'd think that, you know, me being that hyper aware of it would have maybe put me in a different direction, but I kind of took the whole boot thing for granted until it was like 3 months, you know, until we were leaving. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have to figure this out. And it all worked out fine. Boots were great, but you know, that's I think one of those learning processes that was just accelerated to an unbelievable extreme in 7 months.
Well, you had like the crash course into, you know, one of the harder, you know, more unique hunts that you're going to go on. So you did all this physical training. I'm assuming a lot of hiking. Anything else?
Tons of hiking. No, just tons of hiking. I mean, it was basically any time I could find to sneak out, throw on my boots, put some weight in the pack and go for a couple miles, I did it. I mean, it was, the challenge was sort of figuring out that balance between how much time to spend at the range and how much time to go hike. And I think because for me, I was more comfortable in the physical aspect that, you know, I could push through something, but I couldn't manufacture a shot that I didn't know how to take. I leaned a lot more towards, all right, let's put in a couple extra hours in at the range and forego a few extra miles if that's, you know, kind of what you have to do. But that was hard. That was the kind of keep you up at night, am I doing as much as I should be doing right now type thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of hunters have that at some degree, probably not near the proportion of you've got a, you know, once in a lifetime hunt and that you've never trained for, that you have limited time to be ready for. That's pretty incredible. So you once you say, you know, you get on the plane, you land where you're going. Tell me a little bit about how that went when you actually arrived there.
I feel like that was the moment where I just totally let go of all expectations, all like any sort of the fears that kept me up at night is, you know, if I were to be successful or not successful, or you know, was I ready? Was I not ready? Did I bring this? It just kind of vanished, you know, in one step off that plane. Mm-hmm. You know, or like, especially as we got closer and closer, it's just, I'd never gone up there. You know, like I said, I walked off the stage and asked where it was. And so to try to picture the Brooks Range was hard enough. And then all of a sudden you're in the middle of it and it completely takes your breath away. So I think that was kind of the magic of it. It was like, wow, now I just get to enjoy this and you know, kind of have it come at me as it does. And that was, I think, the best feeling I could have had then, because it again, coming back to just making the most of it. And that's something, you know, Cal said before I left, and he was dead serious. He's like, you know, the only way you can blow this hunt is by not enjoying it. And so that was something I definitely took with me, and I think taught me a really good lesson as far as just staying, you know, being an opportunist and thinking, you know, that way, because as you guys know better than anyone, and anyone who's gone on hunts like this before, it's like, you're going to face challenges. You're going to be in situations that suck, but the more you can just be positive, mm-hmm. it kind of tends to find ways to work itself out. And you end up pushing through. So that was the overarching feeling I had, especially right when we hit Coldfoot, you know, it's like, this is cool. This is just a really cool place in the world.
Yeah. So unique. So untouched, at least compared to where we are. You get there. Who'd you bring with?
It was just Rick Smith, who is the videographer. Mm-hmm. Rick's from Bozeman. He's an ultra marathon guy. I think he had just run one before coming up. So he was in shape, ready to go. It was just the two of us. And we'd never met before that. So it was one of those funny, you know, in the airport, like, can I Google this guy to see what his face looks like? We're about to go. Yeah. Especially when you're about to go spend a week with someone. In the get to know him really personally, but Rick's awesome. Couldn't have asked for a better, you know, friend on the trip. And some definitely good and pretty wild memories are made with him up there. He's an awesome dude.
What did your day look like? You know, walk us through the actual hunt, what you did. You know, oh, actually, before we get there, who taught you how to sheep hunt? Like, who gave you the strategy, you know, playbook?
Oh, man. As far as teaching me how to sheep hunt, I don't know if anyone taught me how to sheep hunt. I was referred a book right after I won by Tony Russ, Sheep Hunting. I did buy that off Amazon. I did get a signed copy from him, which is pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome.
That was just, I don't even think that was in the description. But no, really, I mean, my guide.
What a pleasant surprise.
That's pretty sweet, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, bonus points for sure. So, no, my guide, Casey Barton, you know, who took me on the hunt.
Yep.
He's been guiding up there for a couple of years, and I'd say he was, you know, especially critical in terms of helping me understand, because I'll be honest, like, we're riding out. I mean, I'm anxious
Right.
Like I'm excited and I'm enjoying the moment, but of course, like you're anxious to get going. Me, especially on my first big game hunt. I'm sure you guys would feel the same way remembering going back to your first one. Like that morning, you can probably remember what you had for breakfast because every moment you're just chomping at the bit to go. And so I remember you had to be, Casey kind of had to get all the, you know, stock ready and everything. I'm of course like, well, how can I help? You know, and it's like, I'm going to get in his way more than help. And I think he eventually was like, why don't you just go sit down, hang out for a little bit, and then we'll get going.
Pull your jets, Tiger.
But, yeah, exactly. And then we're, you know, we're riding the horses out, and every white rock we saw, I'm like, is that a sheep?
Yep.
To the point where I think he rode a couple feet ahead of me for a little while, just to let me kind of ramble and be excited.
Yeah, you got to get it out of your system. So you get up there, he's walking.
100%.
What's the what was the worst part of the entire trip? What's like the worst thing you had to endure on this sheep hunt?
Man, I think in the film we have it. So I guess going back, you know, we flew into camp, we stayed the night, and they've got an awesome outfit up there. And then got up the next day, got the horses and everything ready for a 3-day spike, and then headed out. And that first day, I actually wasn't even expecting us to be able to hunt. I figured we'd just be kind of riding all day and then setting up camp and then making a push up a ridge the next morning or something. So when we actually started hiking that day, like, oh man, we get to sheep, like we're sheep hunting now. Wow.
Yeah, this is hunting. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So then when we got stuck on the ridge for 6 hours, I think it was, just cause it was a low ceiling day. We had fog rolling in and out. So visibility was bad and we didn't want to bump anything in the fog. So I think we were probably 2,500 vert up or so. And we just sat on a ridge and I, you know, put on every, you know, all of the layers I brought up there and was as comfortable as can be. I mean, honestly, going back to ski racing and downhill ski races where, you know, you're standing in the start and I don't know anyone's familiar with it, but like we're basically racing in long underwear. So to be sitting on the ridge with a bunch of layers on, I was like, this is great. I mean, you just get to hang out for a little bit. Best view there is. And at the same time, I also had no idea how cushy tundra was. So that was like another just pleasant surprise as far as kind of hanging out and just enjoying it. But that was, I mean, it was a long sit. And I think you start to kind of let it sink in and you understand the feeling as far as like when you have an 8-day hunt, how fast day one can kind of make you feel like, oh, wow, that's, we only have 7 left.
Right.
And you kind of, it's easy for that to start sinking into your mindset as far as like, do we need to get this done right now? And we can't afford any setbacks. We need to push up a little higher. We need to see what's here to make sure we got something out of today. Unfortunately, the clouds did break and we were able to push up about another, I don't know, 800 feet or so and got into them. Actually first saw some sheep tracks. And so we were kind of like, okay, let's see if we can't just peek around one more ridge, one more corner. And I think there was kind of 4 young rams, and 1 ram that was maybe legal. Mm-hmm. And, setting eyes on those was on day one, really cool. And just, I would say like a good indicator as far as how the hunt was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
So we couldn't unfortunately get close enough to where I felt comfortable as far as the shot. It was also getting late and Casey, my guide, was right on the edge as far as determining if the older ram was legal or not. He was thinking he was probably 90% sure it was, right, but he wasn't 100%. And that, given the time we decided and the distance of the shot, made the hard decision to back out of there. But to go from like sitting on a ridge to potentially taking a shot on this once in a lifetime hunt in the matter of like an hour is, I think, just the craziest sensation and something that only hunting, I think, can give you as far as an adrenaline pickup.
Yeah. We spent some time just watching the decision and some of the decisions you had to make in terms of shot distance and letting things walk and stuff. It's awesome.
It was crazy. That was one thing that no one prepared me for. Like, and I know obviously I couldn't prepare myself for that, but you know, no one was like, hey man, like you might be facing a situation where you're sitting at 425 and you determined at the, you know, beginning of the hunt that you were comfortable out to 400 and you're going to have to make a tough call. It's like,
yeah,
in no way was that something that I had wrapped my mind around.
It's funny though. You know, you get a lot, I feel like there are a lot of situations like that when you hunt that you weren't really maybe as prepared for as you thought. Different ethical decisions when you're out there, or, you know, something weird happens. What are you going to do right now? The deer takes a step. Are you going to, you know, for us it's archery. So are you going to like reset and rearrange him? Or are you going to try to judge it on the fly, or how far is your maximum distance? And then you got to judge it based on the animal and the conditions. There's a lot to figure out. And it seems like even if you think about it ahead of time, it's still, you have to get used to. And it's the fact that you won't know about it ahead of time.
And I can only imagine that, I mean, with each of those situations, it becomes hope. I mean, I would hope, you know, you become a little bit faster at your decisions, but I mean, yeah. I guess, I don't know. I mean, that's just hard to kind of wrap your head around, because you literally can't fathom it until you're in it, which I sounds like, I mean, to me, it was hard enough with a rifle.
Right.
The bow would add such a new, and will someday.
This year, is this coming year? Where are we going with this bow situation here, Dag?
Oh, man. I am really hopeful that I can get my hands on a bow this summer. And I'm not, I've already determined, like, picky about what I get, or, you know, if it's new or just something that's around. And I just want to start figuring it out. I'd like to just kind of take the same approach as far as understand how it works and, you know, really put the time into learning the mechanisms and practicing as much as I can, because even if I don't archery hunt this year, I know it's something I eventually want to do, just like I knew I wanted to get into hunting. And the way I learn it, it just, that's the way I like to wrap my mind around it. So I'm hopeful that I can get my hand on one. I wouldn't say I've set like a, okay, I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to go on an archery bull hunt this year, try to do a do-it-yourself like hunt. I think that that's maybe a bit ambitious, but
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's actually my, that was kind of be, well, before we get into that, you were successful. You got a beautiful ram. Tell me what it was like to walk up on that animal.
Oh man. I mean, I was really kind of overcome with a number of emotions in terms of excitement and thankful to the animal itself. I mean, I think especially with it being the first big game animal I had harvested, it was a moment of also processing and just trying to really appreciate it. And it was kind of something I've obviously thought about, you know, back on a lot as far as that walking up, you know, the first kind of moments walking up to it. And you just try to soak in every second, because it is it was special. It was really, really special.
Did you quarter it and stuff yourself, or did they help you with that?
Casey helped me a lot, and I was like, I really wanted to learn. I feel like I learned a ton from that first animal, and thankful for it. You know, he probably could have done it in a quarter of the amount of time than what it took to walk me through each step and explain it to me. But I'm thankful that he did, because, you know, it's something that I'll never forget. And, you know, it meant even that much more to me as far as the whole experience to learn that part. And and I think we've got photos of every single quarter, every single backstrap, every single tenderloin, just taking it all in. So that was the first one. And then the pack out, oh my gosh. I think I had said at some point, like, I really want this to hurt. Like, I put a lot into this. Yeah. I want this to like really hurt on the way out. And Casey's like, all right, man, like, we'll let that happen then. And,
take my pack.
Yeah, exactly. So I took one of the quarters, actually, no, sorry, two of the quarters, the cape that it had passed away in a spring, so the cape was
wet,
totally drenched and heavy, and then also the skull and the horns. So, man, my pack with all my gear, spotting scope, everything was, I don't know, it was heavy. It was way heavier than what I'd done. And coming off that mountain, like 3,500 vert, it hurt. I was just covered in sweat on the way down, and we got down after dark, and the days were long there too, but it just took a while to get off. I remember being like in a in the pain cave, like in the yep. in the true to the sense of the word pain cave.
The depths of the pain cave. That was actually Jared's nickname in high school. The pain cave. Oh,
man. You did that on here. Huh?
Yeah, I'm gonna just keep bringing those up. Yeah.
I might need to hear some backstory on that.
Here's the thing. Here's what I like to do, Jared. I like to make up. Anytime someone says a funny two words like pain cave, I just say that that was Jared's nickname. And so Jared's got hundreds of
hundreds of nicknames.
Yeah. They're not that good, but it's
hey, everybody.
I don't know. That one, that one holds a story for sure that you could definitely come up with a good one if it doesn't already yeah. exist.
Yeah, I feel like I need to be very
Jared
witty
fought a guy in the cave
so that
and won.
I can think of a story on the command.
That's right.
That'll go with the nickname.
I'll try to give you a little warning. So you have, I'm guessing, some sheep meat in your freezer right now, or did you eat it already?
No, we do. We still got some left. I've actually been probably savoring every bit of it and kind of, yep. it's been awesome to be able to go in there. And I left the silver skin on there and everything. So just kind of cleaning it up each time, you get to enjoy the hunt and think back on it and then enjoy it. I mean, that stuff is absolutely yeah. delicious. I don't know if you guys have had it. It is so good.
No, I've never been on a doll sheep hunt in the Brooks.
Oh, you have?
So. No. No, I mean, here's the thing. I've never tried. I've never eaten wild sheep. I love, you know, me some domestic sheep. Leg of lamb, a shank, rack of ribs, I mean, some mutton. I'm all over that, but I've never tried. I've never tried some wild sheep. Well, how does it compare? Have you had both?
Oh, man. Yeah, it is. I think unbelievably tender. You can't believe how tender it is given these, you know, rams live in some of the most rugged terrain.
Yeah.
These, you know, those guys are just absolutely living in the rocks, at, you know, 3,500 vertical feet up there. And turns out they are just as tender as they could possibly be. I have yet to have a piece of that ram that wasn't amazing.
How old was it again? Good.
It's eight, so
and that's the legal shooting age, correct? It has to be at least 8 years,
right? Either 8 years old, or full curl, or broomed on both sides.
Oh, yeah,
right. In Alaska.
You,
we were surprised, we thought he was going to be a lot older just based on how past full curl he was,
yeah.
So, it was hard for Casey to age his rings just based off of how light they were and how far away we were. So the full curl is like automatically that's a legal ram.
Yep.
But yeah, that was kind of a surprise.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Aging it on the spot, I've never done it, obviously, but I've seen a lot of people struggle with that decision to like, is it legal? Is it not legal? And that seems like there's some anxiety in that.
Oh man, I don't envy it. I was like, you know, I was very thankful to have him to help me, because what a tough thing to do. And especially on a hunt like that and with all the variables and how much effort it takes to get into a position to even age them, much less take one.
Right.
And to make that call, that's tough. That's a lot.
What's you know, you've had people help you from the very beginning. Have people helped you on the tail end, like with recipes? Has somebody given you an especially good sheep recipe, or did you have to Google that yourself?
There were some good ones at camp. Far as like when we got back and we did cook some of the backstrap and stuff. So I got a couple there. You know, we've also just, I think, experimenting with it. Cal's a great resource.
Of course.
People in the office all have. They're incredible recipes that have been good suggestions. But I think what's been really fun for my fiance and I is just pulling out a cut of meat. And, you know, it was my first time butchering an animal like that. And I got it back in the cooler from the flight and had to kind of repackage everything. And again, being my first doing it on my kitchen table took some time. So I didn't grind anything. I kind of left everything whole and just froze it and wrapped it and everything. But that's been the funnest part, is like just trying it. And I swear we have yet to have a single thing be like, wow, that wasn't what we were expecting. I mean, it's all good.
What's been your go-to recipe? Like what's the best thing you've made so far with it?
I mean, I personally just, if I could eat up that, all of it in steaks, I would. I just think that with how tender it is, it's like, I mean, a little bit of flour, a little bit of oil, light salt, seasoning, pepper, and those things. Yeah, it's all it takes, man. It's like, don't try to reinvent the wheel. Just enjoy it. That's what I would do. But we've had some great sheep chili. That's been, so good. You can't think it's going to get tender, and then you cook it slow, and it just like falls apart. So, I've really enjoyed that.
Is that burger, or is that, are you throwing that through the meat grinder? Which, by the way, was another one of Jared's nicknames in high school, meat grinder. sorry, it was too easy, man. You don't throw it in the meat grinder. You do a little steaks.
Just little steaks. Just cube it up, toss it in there. Get little chunks. Like kind of like back in the day when we'd eat our Lucky Charms, you save all the marshmallows for last.
Yeah,
picking around all the pieces of meat and enjoy them at the very end. But
hey, believe it or not, that's been really good. Place in Shipshewana.
Yeah, Shipshewana,
that
Indiana.
It'll sell you bags of these marshmallows, 5 pound bags, the size of like a pillow.
In high school, I remembered you brought those.
Yes, I did.
To school.
You imagine an entire bowl full of those marshmallows?
That is not
in
bad.
The morning.
It's probably did you try it with milk?
It'll change your life.
Oh goodness,
dude, that's the best. That's genius idea right there.
Why do they put that cardboard crap in?
Hey, hot boga tip number one for you.
Yeah, or pick them out yourself.
That's.
What do you do with the other stuff? What are they selling bags of the other stuff? Whatever that crap is, it's like pieces of cardboard.
Dog food.
Yeah, it's probably dog food.
feed it to the birds. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, so have you been out hunting since? I mean, have you elk hunted, deer hunted, or anything else since you big hunt?
Yeah, believe it or not, I didn't retire. I didn't just say that's it. Excellent. Can't beat it. Read the last chapter. We're done here. No. I got back and we went on a multi-day mule deer hunt here in Idaho, and man, that kicked my butt. That was like wake up call too, just in and of itself, as far as still how much I've got so much to learn. But it was amazing. Funny story from that. We're sitting back there, and I thought I was funny, but we're sitting there glassing for a few hours, and early morning, first light, kind of cold, but enjoying it nonetheless. And I look over at Ford, who I work with here at First Sight, and I was like, Ford, I gotta be honest, man, I don't think there's any dull sheep back here. I thought that was funny, but
yeah, well, you didn't have very much experience looking for anything else, so what did you guys end up getting? A mule deer?
No, we didn't. We went back a couple times, and we saw some deer, which was great, and that was an awesome experience just for me. But no, we didn't. We never got into a situation where we had a shot, at least on the hunt that I was able to go with him. He got a nice buck later in the season, but not me this year. So I'm still just one animal holding strong, but super fired up for this year, and looking forward to it. And would really, really love to get either an elk or a deer. I mean, that'd be awesome.
So you're going out elk hunting, deer hunting. You doing any turkey, spring turkey or bear?
I'm hoping to go along on a spring bear hunt with Paul Peterson here in the office. He drew an awesome bear tag. So I'm hoping to talk him into letting me tag along with him. Turkey would be, it'd be a lot of fun too, kind of still up in that, same area. But I don't know, kind of just taking it as it comes and seeing who will bite the bullet and invite me, because, I'm not going to be the one showing anyone around, that's for sure.
But you seem like you'd be a good luck charm. Right, you're a lucky.
that's how I'm selling it so far. It's been working okay, but we'll see.
So, do you consider yourself a hunter? You've been on a dog.
I do. I mean, I've been a dog sheep. Don't forget about my quail and my
dog. Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. What was that, Susie Mallard?
Yeah.
That's true. You are. You're a regular.
He's more than.
I've never killed a Susie Mallard.
I do in the sense that I just. I've learned a new appreciation as far as the outdoors and getting out there and challenging myself and just kind of spending nights under the stars. And that's really, to me, like the most important part of it. And I hope I learn enough to be successful on some hunts, and especially on hunts that I kind of go out on my own. But, in the moment, I literally look at it as just getting back out there and continuing to go after it. And that is, I think, for me, like the best learning experience that this has given me. Just like a kind of new appreciation for the outdoors. I mean, skiing is amazing and has always been a big part of my life. But when you kind of start doing something at such a young age, it's really fun to later in life pick something else up and try to just continue to learn from it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but you are getting into archery. We need some verbal commitment.
Yes. And actually, so I thought this would be the best opportunity. You guys would be the best people to ask this. Cause in all honesty, I am at ground zero. I mean, this is me driving back from Sheep Show asking what a rifle is. I want all of you, from each of you guys, like start me off. Like, what's your pieces of advice? Where do I go? What's like, how would you recommend, my like sort of trajectory here?
Yeah. Can I start this, Jerry?
Yeah, you absolutely can.
My first recommendation would be, I mean, you're surrounded by a bunch of really good resources, but I would ask them to point you toward a bow shop. Somebody that is a good bow tech.
Reputable bow shop.
Reputable is the word that I was looking for.
You're welcome.
A reputable bow shop with a guy who is going to let you shoot a bunch of different kinds of bows. He's going to walk you through, your draw length, which he'll help you measure, your draw weight, which will probably start 60 pounds usually for a compound bow. And he'll walk you through arrow selection and everything else. If you can find someone that you can trust and they're local, we've got a great dealer, a great archery shop out here, Long Range.
Yep.
But they're super helpful. The reason I like them so much is they're willing to walk you through every facet, every question, and explain why they're recommending certain things. So my tip, my hot boga tip, is find a good reputable bow shop and a good archery tech.
I can go off what James just said. Hot boga tip number two, I would say when you're at this local shop, shoot all of the bows. Don't just focus in on one that your buddy told you about or what you read about. Like, you're going to shoot a bow that maybe somebody else doesn't like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think, and I think that's a good point because you and I have shot since we've known each other. We would own it for various periods of time, like virtually every bow maker.
Well, I don't know. I'm pretty close.
Except I think unless it's like, I haven't shot a Darton. Can't say I've owned a Darton. But, we ended up on New Breed. Great archery, great bow company. But it all is really up to the shooter. I mean, what you like, what's comfortable for you. Yeah, I think that really is something you got to try them all.
Shoot them all. Yeah. See how they feel.
Okay. All right. So, I guess it's interesting to me as far as the nuances between different brands I always kind of come back to this with skiing because like that's my background, but it's that way with skiing in terms of different flecks and skis and, slightly different cuts, slightly different lengths. Is that kind of the same basis between the differences between each company, or how does that sort of break down?
I mean, there's a lot
of one fits better than the other.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. So it's like, is it the right axle to axle, or like essentially wheel to wheel? Is it what's the brace height? So the brace height is between the string and the kind of where your handle is on the bow, your grip. Generally, like the longer the brace height, the more forgiving the bow is because the arrow is on the string for less time. And generally, those are slower bows. They're generally like more forgiving. So when I shoot, I usually go for my preference for a compound bow would be the 35-inch axle to axle, which is fairly long on the longer end. And I like around a 7-inch brace height if I can. I don't need a ton of speed, in my personal opinion, but I want something real comfortable, real accurate, something that I just feel like even if I make a mistake, it really won't hurt. The accuracy that much. So then that's how I would do it.
And then you can even dive into some manufacturers, will make a better back wall. So when you draw that bow back all the way, it's just going to feel rock solid at that point.
Yeah, some are squishy.
Some feel a little bit squishy, like you can just pull it a little bit more. You hear a lot of people talk about valleys and let-offs and all that different stuff. And that's just all in the design of the cam and those mods of the wheels.
Yeah.
And some bows just pull back different.
But like you said, even let off is personal preference because some people like to be able to pull it back, not really have to try a ton of let off. So you hit that valley and you hold it back. It's no problem. Some other people like it actually to be a little bit more jumpy because, and actually, I actually like it a little bit more jumpy because when I get it back, if I have Valley and I'm like, I don't really need to hold it back that far, I kind of like let down a little bit as I shoot.
Right.
Like I feel like I'm not, I need to be pulling and putting more back pressure. But, you know, I know guys who like a ton of like an elite, you know, like that Energy 35 that you had.
Yeah.
Super big Valley.
It kind of just comes back to you just got to shoot them. You'll feel the difference between them once you start ripping arrows down.
Cool. I mean, it sounds like just a ton of fun to be able to go out there and swing them.
Yeah.
Feel it out and find what one works.
Yeah.
I'm like a little bit nervous that once I do, it's going to be, you know, a big expense for me as far as figuring it out.
Yeah, it'll be an expense.
That's the way it goes. Yeah.
When you know, like after shooting like four or five different, maybe like flagship bows from these top companies, like you'll know which one feels the best to you.
Yeah.
It's just something you got to feel.
Yeah. And it's so fun. It's so fun just to go pick them all. Cause like it's at the end of the day, you're shooting a bunch of bows. So it's kind of a fun decision to make.
That's so cool though. But you're saying like, basically it's better to go and start there versus just start shooting something that I'm able to get my hands on to just start shooting to shoot, like to get comfortable with sort of the motion and the repetition of it all. It's better to start with something that's right for you versus to just go to something that's better later on.
Jared, what do you think about that? I didn't know that was an option.
Yeah, I didn't know that option was on the table.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got something, I don't know. You got to start somewhere. I had some old, you know, and that's worked for me. So, yeah, I guess that could work too. I still want an archery tech.
I'm
going to
put this on Tag's question. He didn't give us a budget.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, the thing is, because, you know, if you have a bow that you have, if you've got a bow that you've been given or whatever, I still would go to an archery shop, get it tuned for you, have them, you know, give you a walkthrough and everything else. I still probably would go to a shop or a guy I know if I know a good archery tech.
That makes sense. I mean, on the budget side, I'm getting married this summer, so we're going to go low budget.
There are, you know, high end, mid, and then low end, and they're all good. Like you can't go wrong. So
okay,
they'll have the shop will have them. Yeah, that's good to know because you're gonna have to. And during the process when you start shooting, let us know if you have any questions. We at least know somebody that would be able to help you.
Appreciate that.
Well, hey, Tag, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate you talking with us, telling your story. You guys have been great telling us about llamas and now sheep hunting. So yeah, thank you.
No, thank you guys for having me on. Sorry it took a couple times, but it was awesome getting to chat and appreciate all the advice. I mean, I think that's the next thing as far as growing into hunting and the major learning curve. I mean, wow, just hearing you guys go through that, what I know is second nature to you as far as
was it much?
And outs and components of the bow. But I'm glad that this is recorded. I'm going to need just that segment. I'm going to listen to it probably 1,000 times to try to get it to register. But I look forward to talking with you guys more and hopefully being able to talk to a few of those things down the road.
Yeah, we're going to want to have you come back on and we're going to want to talk through the beginning of your archery experience when you start doing that. So be ready.
I'd love that. I'd love to do it.
Cool, man. Well, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. And have a great rest of your evening.
Yeah, you too.